Welcome to the Jacob's Well podcast. These messages are intended to feed you some great stuff that you can really dig your teeth into all week and beyond. That's why you can find it anytime, along with other great resources and ways to keep the conversation going at jacobs-well.net/leftovers. Enjoy the message.
Good morning, Jacob's Well. Good to see you all here today. I want to talk a little bit about why we need to rethink our boxes, why we need new boxes. And I want to spend time with our guest, Brenda Caselius, the State Commissioner of Education. But just, I think we need to just park and think about this box-breaking thing for a minute first. And because I think, you know, one of the things is that we need boxes. We need ways to understand our world and to categorize things. There's no way we could go through life if we didn't have some efficiencies. But the trouble is we park on those. We treat them as sacred and holy, and we are unwilling to change them. And we know we need to continually build bigger and better boxes to live in. And one of the things is that most of us operate with a bunch of boxes that have long passed their expiration date. And they're still in our cupboards, and we're still eating out of them, even though they really don't help us grow anymore. In fact, they're often hurtful to us and to other people. But hey, that's what we've got, and so that's what we use. And as a community, we need to be helping each other live in ways where, one, we have minds that say, yes, I do need to rethink my boxes and look for bigger and better ones. We have supportive people as we learn to adapt and deal with the change of letting go of something and taking on something. But also that as a community, then we can have a place where we can learn to be respectful to each other as we all try to deal with our boxes. And for sometimes, you know, different boxes are harder for different ones of us. But nonetheless, as we go forward, we lean into it. We don't just, you don't really have to break that. No, we really all do need to break our boxes. And one of the real ironic things is religion, among many other forces in our world, has been one of the main enforcers of old boxes. And I say that's ironic because I don't care what religious or ideological movement you're thinking about, whoever started that was a box breaker, right? And I don't think they were a box breaker, a reformer, a new thinker, a movement starter in order to just get you from there to here and then stay there forever. It was a process. They were creating a movement. A movement indicates movement, which is, I know, kind of hard to wrap your head around, but it does, you know, and it keeps going. It doesn't just stop. It doesn't create a new status quo. My pitch is getting these boxes and living lives together where we rethink the boxes that we're in, we examine them, we're self-aware of them, we dare, we're bold enough to try new things and to evaluate those and to support others in doing that in order to make sure that the way we're living is healthy for us and it's not hurtful to other people and we're all able to grow for it is a basic thing of what life is all about. And we need to do that. Jesus was one of those box breakers. And I've talked a little bit about that these last weeks, but I've used the language of him being a rug puller. I mean, that's if you read the stories from Jesus' life, he's continually pulling the rugs out from underneath other people's feet. He isn't doing it to trip them up. He's doing it to get them moving. They're stuck. He wants to actually kind of get them dancing. I want to take a look just at Mark chapter 7. So one of the things with SOAP was this way of kind of reading the Bible in a sustainable way where it actually might start making some sense to you. This week, we're going to be using Mark 7, and we're going to have some people writing some commentary on it, too. But the seventh chapter of Mark's gospel, Mark's story about the life of Jesus, okay, he tells three stories in that chapter. In each story, Jesus is really pretty box-breaking. I mean, he's upsetting everybody's status quo in each one. And if you're just looking at it, certainly the people experience it and say, like, where is this Jesus coming from? No matter what happens, he's like just, you know, pulling a rug out from underneath their feet. But if you look at it from the perspective that his main job was to break boxes, to open us up to new realities and new ways of thinking and living and being with one another, then it makes perfect sense. He was hitting three different places in our world and in our lives where we need to rethink the boxes we're in. So just really, really fast, take time this week and read those three stories and wrestle with them yourself. But just real fast, I want to just take a look at it. The first one is, and I'll say this, you know, if Jesus is a savior, which I guess he is, I think he isn't saving us from an afterlife in hell. He's saving us from creating hell right now with our boxes. I mean, I think that's what he's doing. He's saying, can you create that life? Can the kingdom come near today? Is the kingdom growing near? Because you're not living in what was, but what is. So the first of the three stories, Jesus is being confronted by all the religious rulers because his disciples aren't washing their hands before they eat, which is a Jewish, you know, law. And Jesus is like, oh, please, come on. Do you guys really not understand? And so it's a fairly long conversation. Read it. It's just full of kind of neat stuff. But I love, pop ahead to that next one. The first one, Jesus is saving us from our rules boxes. And that's what that first story is. He's saving us from our boxes of rules. Rules, rituals, ruts, routines. Could I add religion? It's another R word. Certainly fits. He wants to save us from all those sorts of things, all right? And I love this line that he gives in the middle of it. He says to all of them, you've got a fine way of rejecting the commandment of God. You have a fine way of, like, totally forgetting what God was calling you to and what God's all about in order to keep your tradition. You know? So you have a fine way of not living where God is calling you to in order to keep your order, to stay in your box. Story number one. Story number two is a little bit different. He runs into this woman, all right? A Syrophoenician woman. You don't need to know it. It means she's an immigrant. She's not supposed to be in Palestine. She's Greek. She's a Gentile, a non-believer, a non-Jew, all right? And she comes into Jesus, and her daughter is ill. She uses the language, my daughter has a demon, which if you go to first century, it means there's something wrong with my daughter, and we have no understanding what to do. So the language was this: she's possessed by a demon. It's a little stretch for us for 2,000 years later, but it says, you can't help my daughter. And Jesus here, wanting to break her his box, says, are you serious? You're not a Jew? Says, we don't steal food from the table from the children and give it to the dogs. And she says, yeah, true, but even the dogs get the crumbs that fall to the floor. And Jesus says, you got it. That's what I was wanting to look from you. Do you believe in yourself enough? Do you believe that God loves all people enough to stand here and say, no, I deserve this too? And Jesus says, you are absolutely right. Thank you for giving me the answer and teaching everyone here that they need a new box that includes all people, not just insiders. So that's the next box Jesus is trying to save us from. The box is about people. Who's in, who's out? Boy, that seems to have some repercussions for politics today, life today. There is no box of that. We need to keep including more people. The third box, the third story. He runs into a man who's can't speak, can't hear. And this man comes for healing. And here in this case, he doesn't do this publicly. He takes this man, he takes him aside where just the two of them can spend time with each other. And the last story, he heals the daughter of this woman just by saying she's healed. He doesn't go touch her. He doesn't say anything. He says, just go home. She's okay. All right? And this man, he takes him aside. He touches him. He sighs. I think his sighs are like, when will everybody start figuring this out? But he just says one word, Ephatha, which you have to practice saying because it's really hard with all those Fs and Ths in it. He says Ephatha to him. And that heals him so he can speak and so he can hear. And Ephatha means be open. We're talking about boxes. This is the third story where Jesus is trying to save us from our boxes. And he says, be open. Get rid of those closed boxes. You need to see out over the edge. You need to see what's beyond. That's where you're leading. This story was a healing of a man, according to the literature from 2,000 years ago, but it's really all an allegory. He's telling us one thing that we need to know. We need to be saved from boxes. This is the box of self, the way the man understood himself, the way other people saw him as well, because he was a person who couldn't speak, couldn't hear. And Jesus says, no, you're way more than that. Be opened. So with that said, having that framework of this is the kind of community we want to be and what we're looking at and what we're trying to do with things, I want to invite Brenda Caselius up. Brenda is the State Commissioner of Education here in Minnesota. Brenda's also, I always like to say, she's a Jacob's Well groupie.
Yes.
So we've had a chance to do a little bit of work together, and she's been part of events with us in the past, but I think that's really kind of, it's wonderful to have you here.
Thank you.
And we know that there's a lot of stuff to break. So, appointed by Governor Dayton 6.5 years ago, got
yes.
A year and a half at least.
I didn't think I'd be in it this long.
You are.
But I'm in it.
You are here.
Yep.
So she's here. So we're going to have some conversation about, particularly around education, but a lot of the other things that she's involved, kind of the arms and legs get beyond that into box breaking. But like Karen said, we'd like you to be part of the conversation so you can text questions up to the number will be up there. It's also on the bottom of your Sunday paper. And we brought in from Pasadena, Caitlin Sitch, who's got her master's from Columbia in social work, sociology and education, as our moderator. She also happens to be my daughter.
Yay!
And the mother of my two grandchildren. But is in town right now, and with her background, and she has talked to Brenda in the past, I thought she'd be a great person. So she will receive your messages. You can also write them down on a scrap of paper, give them to her. She'll try to...
For the Minnesota Department of Education, Kara Brenda Casilia, State Commissioner.
Oh, thank you.
Hold on a second.
Oh, thank you. Should I open it now?
Yeah, why not? It's a box for you. What's in it? What's in your box?
I love boxes.
Do you? Oh. You obviously like opening boxes.
I especially like leaning into boxes. Let's see. Commissioner Casilius, we all went to school with kids that looked like us and teachers that looked like our parents. We sat in rows and did what we were told, and it was good enough for us. We think it's good enough for our kids today, too.
Well, sincerely, us.
Yeah.
I guess that's the box you've been handed.
Yep.
You like that box?
No, not really.
So Brenda, welcome, and want to pick your brain about this, but just thinking about education. So you've been kind of looking at education from even a national level, but certainly a state level. And what would you say, what are the biggest boxes that we're stuck in right now and that we need to do something about?
So before I answer that question, it's interesting that you say the national level, because that's quite an interesting conversation now that everyone's paying attention to, which before not a lot of folks paid attention to the national policy and the new secretary. So that's interesting, and I sit on the Chief State School Officers Board and have for several years, but now after 6.5 years, I'm the second most senior chief in the nation, and the only African American out of all 50 states and territories. Ooh. So that's quite a box right there.
Yeah, well, we hope that voice can continue.
Yeah, so the biggest box that we need to break out of, and that's the question.
It's a good question.
It is. And I think the biggest one is some of the preconceived notions, like the note that came to me just now in my box, is that we have to really look beyond the bricks and mortar. We have to look beyond how we use time and the rules that have been given to us by tradition. And I think that that's the huge challenge in front for all of us is... school is very different today than it was when we were kids. Mm-hmm. But yet people still say and have expectations of, well, you know, it's the way it worked for me, you know, and it's the way that we're all comfortable with. And we've got to break through that, because our little kiddos, their learning style is very different than what we've been presenting them.
Right. So some of the things that, change about boxes in general is like our own internal need to growth. After you spend so much time in something, you become fluent in it enough that you're ready for what's next. But then also external environment changes.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's a big element of education. So the external environment around our bricks and mortar schools doesn't look like it did in 1950.
No, our complexion is very different, especially here in Minnesota, where we have been used to a very traditional kind of white majority, affluent middle class, even in rural Minnesota. And now we are much more diverse, multiple languages being spoken, lots of new to country children within our schools. And even the teacher corps looks different in what they've been trained and how they've been trained to work with our kids. So I think that it's very, very different. The introduction of technology and the interaction that plays into teaching and learning, the introduction of accountability now and new accountability systems have put a tremendous amount of pressure on teachers. I'm not sure I'm a buyer. I don't believe so much in the accountability. We've been doing it for 20 years. So I think that there's different levers that we can use to move education forward that would break down some of those boxes and barriers that get in our way of really educating children and presenting them a well-rounded education. And we've been kind of stuck.
Yeah. The way you're saying that now, it sounds like we're just tweaking a little bit. When I was talking to you last time, it was more like sledgehammer talk.
Yeah. So, I mean, we should be doing sledgehammer, but we've been putting ourselves in these boxes. So we're still stuck in the box, but we need to think very radically and very different about how we do education.
So one of those environmental changes you referred to, technology. When I was in grade school, we were lucky enough that my parents had a relatively new encyclopedia set. And so I didn't have to go to the library. I could do research right then and there. But still, my teacher knew more. You know, it was up to date and stuff like that. So she was the authority, she or he, usually she. And that was it. And now that's, I think, changed a little.
Oh, it's completely flipped. So, you know, it's interesting. I'm one of these folks who I'm not sure we're going to need college in the future. I think that businesses will come along and train their next workforce into what they need to know to be able to do the jobs. Because before, when college was, or even school, was the only place that you could go and get information. People actually gave the information.
By someone who knew more than you.
And even the discussion and the thinking and the critical thinking was there in the classroom, and that's where that happened. And it happened inequitably from one teacher to the next teacher based on what that teacher knew. Now it's right there in your phone. You can ask a question, get an answer from multiple perspectives. You can engage in a dialogue. You can have a chat. You can talk to other professors from across the nation. You can have access to researchers. And I mean, it's amazing. So teachers no longer are the experts. So they could be saying, oh, yeah, this is, what I've learned and what I've thought in my master's program or my doctoral program, and I'm delivering it to a student. And then the student can question you back and say, well, you know, Ms. Caselius, I don't think so. I see three other references here of information that would prove you false. And so the teacher has to be ready, especially at the upper grade levels, to experience challenges to belief systems and to the knowledge that they're presenting in the classroom, because students are more globally connected and aware, and they have greater access to multiple perspectives.
So it's not so much the delivery of content it is as the
facilitate
a conversation, to take deeply, bring accountability to it, and have enough of a span of knowledge about the issue at hand that they can kind of help guide people through it, but not in the content delivery.
That's right.
Caitlin, it sounds like you've got
we got a couple questions about teachers. How do they feel like they can project their ideas, their experiences, their opinions on these topics that are ever-changing without fear of retaliation, without fear of being fired or having parents everywhere? And also, teachers that were trained previously that are the more rote
memorization.
Yeah, exactly. How do you kind of close that gap between the newer teachers and the critical thinking, the innovation, and then the more rote teaching?
Well, teachers learn best from other teachers, right? And so I think that the way you close gaps between the more experienced teachers like me and newer teachers is to get them working together. And we do that typically in what's called professional learning communities. Sometimes teachers have shared time during the day called shared preparation time, where they come together and they talk about what they're going to offer and to students, and they challenge each other on what they're going to offer and present, and then open it up for enrichment opportunities for students to go and find new information into the discussion. And then they often have Socratic seminars, meaning deeper discussion types of seminar in the classroom where they discuss that. And that can happen at the kindergarten level. So knowing how that progression of learning happens for the students in front of you is really important in understanding cognitive, developmental, kind of progression of how kids learn and how to present. But kids, even at the youngest ages of kindergarten, preschool, can think very deeply about things like, why is the sky blue? You know, and so how we talk to them about those things, or why is there pollution, or why does that person look different, or why is their skin color different than mine, and how we as adults react is really important, because our kids are in a very different world now than we were when we were younger. So I often will say it's us adults that are stuck, not our kids. And it's adults create the conditions in which children are successful.
We're building boxes for our kids to go in. I mean, they're coming at us kind of without one. They're just like, what's the world about? What's it like? How would I think about it? How do I operate? And we build a box to say, okay, we're going to fit you into this. Mm-hmm. But it sounds, Caitlin, like your question.
How do support built growing out of that box? If we know that we were raised in a certain privilege in a certain way, and that worked for us, but we know we need to break down that box, how do parents support our kids in that?
You just keep on talking to them about and encouraging them to ask the deeper questions. I mean, I think as adults, we're sometimes afraid to take the deeper questions and to answer those. And also exploring our own biases and how we talk to kids about things. So I think that's the best way as parents. As teachers, it's about really getting out of your box and talking to other teachers and seeing how is that... what other teachers are doing, getting a better impact with students and creating better cultures where everyone's open to talking about the really difficult things and leaning in to those really difficult conversations and not shooing away from them because you're not certain how you're going to, you know, if you're going to say the right or wrong thing. Now, in terms of getting fired, you know, tenure helps with that, right? So, you know, there's that whole conversation and debate about teacher tenure, but I think it's a good thing that teachers are able to speak up and speak their minds and challenge authority, because you have to lead up to, and so I think that that's really important.
Right. Just not. I think tenure is a great thing when we don't have a status quo system.
Yeah.
What does a not status quo system look like? Do we need more teachers that represent the different races and socioeconomic children? How do we build that?
Yeah, well, so we've been working on some policies around teacher diversity. In Minnesota, it's just incredibly disappointing that less than 5% of our teachers are teachers of color. And so we have a huge amount of work to do in Minnesota. And so that means we've got to work with our white teachers. Our teachers are also more female than male. And so there's gender imbalance as well. And so there's a lot of initiatives we can do at the state level to get involved. So we have teacher reimbursement for tuition. We've been doing trainings in cultural competence. You know, there's other things that we've been trying to do to encourage kids to want to become teachers. And one thing I think is critical is pay. I mean, I think that teachers need to get paid more money because our unemployment rate is 4%. And so if you can take a job out of high school and you're a computer science engineer, for instance, why go into education when you can get $75,000 for raising your family or $35,000 as a teacher? So I think that we've got to really look at those structures and the equity around funding. In Finland, for instance, their teachers are paid like any other profession. Mm-hmm. And so I don't want to say that teachers aren't mission-driven. I mean, I believe teachers go into teaching anyway, you know, regardless of the money. I don't think it's just about money. It's about working conditions, too. But I do think that that's a critical point in the recruitment side of things.
Right.
Do you think that breaking down those boxes, bringing in a more... diverse teaching staff would help close the achievement gap? I know there's been several questions on that and the role race plays in that.
I think that it helps students see themselves in the person that's teaching them. I don't think it's good for someone to go through, like me as an African American, I went through almost my entire education career without ever having an African American teacher. And so I think that it's good to have more teachers in the classroom. I don't think that means that white teachers can't be effective with kids. So I'm a little bit out of that box of thought. I think that any teacher can be effective, and it's more that the child has a really incredible adult who's empathetic and understanding and can work with children. But it does matter. I mean, there is new research also that shows that just having one African-American teacher for an African-American boy makes a difference to them in their ability to graduate and persist and go to college. So I think it is important.
Right. I don't think we need to match up like, you know, every kid is taught by someone of their race, but for them to see the teaching staff around them to represent the larger population and to sometimes be lined up with their own and sometimes be lined up with people that aren't but are sensitive and aware, then you feel like you're
And it's important for white kids to have kids of teachers of other races as well. So just good for everybody.
So, I know a lot of the ideas and things that you've been pushing on may not seem rocket science to everybody, but it's been really tough for some people. And you told me, there's a quote that's actually on the back of the Sunday paper, but when Governor Dayton asked you to take this position, you said, well, you know, I'm a reformer. You know, can I go and, my language, break some boxes? Mm-hmm. And he said to you,
be bold, but don't be reckless. And so to me, what that meant was, and he's such a pragmatist. I mean, he is just an incredible human being, and I really would not be in this job still if it wasn't for Mark Dayton, and thank God he was a teacher. So it makes it a lot easier, because when we're talking about education, he loves to talk about education. It's his priority, and children and families. And so it just, it makes it easier when we're talking about policy and breaking policy. But what I think he meant by be bold but don't be reckless means that if you're going to step into it and you're going to start pushing through these boxes and these big, huge system structures, you know, called Minnesota State Education, rural, regional, urban, suburban, you know, charter, non-charter, traditional, if you're going to start pushing on some of those belief systems and going deeper, then don't be reckless. Make sure you do the caretaking that comes along with it. Make sure that people are listening and that you're going out and talking to real Minnesotans and that you're, the policies that we put forth are policies that we can bring everybody together around. And so I've tried to be very careful around bipartisan policies, especially in such a partisan divide that we have in our country, to really work alongside, because the governor obviously is a Democrat, Republicans and stakeholders and teachers and principals and advocacy groups and tried to civil rights groups and really tried to bring everybody to the table and really lean in and push through some of those very difficult conversations.
So you use the word lean in a number of times, and I know just last, was it Wednesday or Thursday you had the hearing?
Yes, Wednesday.
So introducing a toolkit for school districts and I suppose schools to use to begin to understand how they can accommodate the needs of transgender and gender nonconforming kids.
Yep.
And there was a little opposition.
Yeah, might say.
but it did pass, and which I think is really an important thing for, you know, I talked about, is it the boxes we're in, are they, do we grow because of that box, and is it not hurtful to other people? I think we're fine. We have a box that has been hurtful to a lot of a lot of kids that are dealing with gender role issues. What was that like, and what did it mean for you to lean into the hundreds of people that showed up at that hearing wanting this all to go away? They just don't want to hear about it. They don't want this box opened up. We just let our kids go to school the way they always did.
Well, for me and for the governor, all means all. So you don't just pick some kids or over other kids. I mean, every kid must feel safe. And we received our, when it hit for me was last year when we received our results from the school safety survey for students. And they told us that five times more than their cisgendered peers did the transgender students feel bullied. And over 50% of them said that they had thought about suicide or had attempted suicide. To me, that was like a fire alarm and a crisis call. And we had started to hear more from school superintendents saying, can you help us with this issue? Can you provide technical assistance? And so, and then, you know, we, in back in 2013, passed the, or 2014, passed the school bully bill. Right, and Safe Schools Act in Minnesota, and that was really tough policy to get through. Even with a full Democratic legislature, it was tough to get it through, you know, and like marriage and all that stuff was happening at the same time. And so I think that, you know, this to us was about kids being safe in school, flat out. And so that's just a non-negotiable. So it's easier to face the signs and face the protests and angry people when you know you're on the right side of kids. And so, I just kept on, listening intently to if there was a kernel of something that was being said that I could make a change that was good substantive, feedback for the toolkit. I met with the family council the day before and said, if there's anything in here that you think I can change, that would, but I'm not backing off of the toolkit. Schools will get a toolkit because they need these resources so that children are safe. And so, I tried to do the caretaking through the process and having it open for public comment for over 78 days and, talking to the family council and offering myself up and asking them to continue to be engaged, that we will continue to make edits to it as necessary based on what we learn or based on new Supreme Court case law or so.
You can go online.
You still have to just keep moving.
Yeah.
Right?
Lean into that.
It is.
That's be bold, don't be reckless. You don't want to leave just bodies in the wake because that would be hurtful, but this has to be done.
Right.
So what you introduced with that, which I think is really key for all of us in our box breaking, is sometimes am I supposed to impose this box breaking on someone else or not? And, because sometimes maybe I just don't like your box. Maybe I don't prefer it, or I think it's unsophisticated. It's more preferential things, not real things. But you're pointing at data. You're saying the box that we're living in right now is hurting kids,
yes.
And I can demonstrate it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's I'm not going back. I'll listen to you. I'll talk. I'm sure you've got ideas and understandings that I need to hear yet. But as you said earlier, is that I'm standing here as a commissioner of education for the state of Minnesota, and I'm representing all kids, and kids are being hurt. I am not backing down.
Yeah.
Take feedback, but I'm going to lean into this, and we're going to go forward because the data shows kids are being hurt.
Yeah, and sometimes you stand up for kids who can't stand up for themselves.
Amen.
And they're just getting hurt, and there are a number of them who came and talked about the pain that they felt. And that was what was so surprising to me is that there was, by some in the audience, a complete invalidation of those kids and their pain. And I just don't see how that's right.
Hold the mic up close.
Sorry. Do you think in areas that aren't quite as accepting as, say, the Minneapolis public schools or diverse, is there a risk of drawing too much attention to those kids?
Not if it makes them safer. So I think that...
I guess the question was, can't really imagine it being really, really well accepted in my small town high school or where I grew up.
So the great thing about this action that we took on Wednesday is that the toolkit is optional. It's not a mandate. So school districts will be able to contextualize the choices within the resources, the things that they can use, and take the steps of progress however their communities feel that they can move forward within that context of the community. So it's not a public policy. It's not guidance. But it is very clear in that students will be protected from discrimination. They will be protected from harassment. And these are the things under Title IX federal law and under our Safe in Schools Act in the state law. And we make it very clear on what's optional and what is not so that students are not discriminated against.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any overflow between the secular and charter schools and what the public schools either can make sure there's no discrimination, or is there not really any of the policies?
So charter schools are public schools. So charter schools have to comply to state and federal policy. Private schools do not. Private schools can do what they would like to do. They, they're secular, they can have religious education. And we're not trying to infringe on anybody's religious beliefs. We're not, trying to make a position there. We are simply stating that children who are non-gender conforming, transgender, intersex, whatever, they choose to express their gender have a right to the exact same education as anybody else in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just about fairness and what the purpose. Now, people who are against that, when they go home, they can do whatever they want at home, but at school, it's, there's a separation of church and state.
Yeah.
And so I think that it's that everybody is given an opportunity to have a great education.
Right. and, you know, and what people decide to do, like how they are going to, what kind of box they want to create around the schools is up to them, but we're all dealing with the same reality.
Yeah.
This transition is happening in society. People that are having had different identities in the past are discovering them, they're speaking out and wanting to live them out. So whether it's a public school or a private school, somehow they're all going to have to figure out how we're going to deal with this reality.
Yeah.
And I think this toolkit is a good one that allows districts to be fully informed and to have some ideas to work with.
Well, it wasn't too long ago that we weren't drinking out of the same water fountain as people with darker skin or using the same bathroom as people with darker skin. And so this is just another step forward for being inclusive of all people.
We probably have time just for one thing, so go ahead. Change the direction a little
Shifting
bit.
Shifting gears just a little bit, we had several questions come in about college and your statement that you're not sure college is going to be the way to go. And that's a box I think a lot of us grew up with and are maybe put our kids in a little bit, whether how much we admit to it or not. But how is there more to college than just training people? Is it a critical thinking? And also, how does that go down into secondary school, primary school, if college is going to be shifting?
So it's my prediction. I don't know if that's based by research or not, but I think that this is like the hardest thing for parents, right? Every parent wants their kid to go to four-year college, but it is not the way of the future. And two-year college is just as good. Getting a credential, getting your apprenticeship in plumbing, getting an apprenticeship in welding. You know, we've got to get out of our box as parents and realize that any work is valuable work. And, you know, we still, especially white middle class, you know, affluent families still really think the only way forward for their kids is a four-year college, and that may not be what's right.
What about that larger role of like learning to think, the liberal arts approach to college, which isn't so much about the content but more about rounding out the individual and making sure that they're well grounded in the larger panoply of issues and disciplines in life before they go and specialize?
Well, I think that, you know, largely people have that now with the access to the media and the thought and the news and the discussion that happens now and the multiple perspectives that are brought forward. And it's about which communities and which experiences we put ourselves into and what boxes we get out of in order to do that learning. That learning does not just solely happen in the classroom. And I would suggest that even more meaningful learning might happen, at church, or in a small group, or at work, or with a friend group who's doing a book study. I just think that it used to be that liberal arts education was only available in college, and now people are thinking about deeper issues and way more aware now because it's right there. I mean, we get alerts when things happen, right, in the world, and we think deeply about them. We talk to our neighbors, and we talk to each other, and we talk to our family members. That learning challenges us to think deeper about the bigger problems that we all are facing in our shared humanity. So,
and I do think we need to start broadening, make sure we're broadening people at a much earlier age, because we need to know what to do with all that information feed, because a lot of us are using it just to create an echo chamber so that I'm not broadening, I'm just getting stronger and stronger about my little narrow path.
And I can promise you that higher ed is much more stuck than K-12. Good. Sorry about any higher ed professors who might be out there, but I mean, they are, this is what's in the body of literature and the knowledge, and you must have this in order to be this or that, whereas K-12 teachers are much more open now to trying to present multiple perspectives and present different information and content in multiple different ways so that children are learning. And I think we have great teachers in Minnesota who are doing this really deep work.
Good. We're going to have to go. How many people here are either going to school themselves or you work at a school? Wow, so there's a lot. So thank you, all of you.
Thank you.
There's a lot more to talk to Brenda about and a lot of questions that we'll share those with each other and try to get some maybe responses via Facebook or something on those as well. But September 20th, it's a note on the bottom of the outline. September 20th, I think it's going to be at 7 o'clock. I don't know where, but Brenda is going to be here for like an education forum.
Yeah.
and we'll have a lot of time for just sharing and talking and stuff like that. So we'll keep you aware of that, but know that that's here, because I know this is like just enough to make me frustrated with all the stuff we didn't get to talk about and really dig into. So we'll be glad to have you back for that. And just in 30 seconds, she's leaving for Kenya tomorrow on an experience with the WE program, which Minneapolis Public Schools has been involved with, and our kids at Jacobs Wall have been involved with. And it's going to be a life-changing experience. Maybe we're just going to have you come and talk about that.
Oh, that would be amazing,
too. But, so if you can give us Governor Dayton's phone number, too. And and then thank you so much.
Thanks.
For being here. And Katie, thank you, too, for helping
out.
Thank
you.
Thank you for your questions.
Thanks for listening. If you found this podcast valuable, please pass it along to others. And we'd love to hear from you, too. You can email us at info@jacobs-well.net or message Jacobs Well Minneapolis on Facebook. We see what we do as a community really making a difference for people. Since you're listening, you probably have, too. If you'd like to make a donation to support this work, you can find ways at jacobs-well.net/give. Thanks. Listen again next week or join us in person Sunday mornings at 10:30.